Honorable Phillips, good morning.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Minister.
Morning.
Good morning, Deputy Minister.
Good morning, Deputy Minister.
Morning, Chair. How are you?
Good and you, and welcome back if you're back.
Thank you very much. I am back, Chair. As you can see, the South African flag behind me. I'm back.
I thought you do carry it along with you wherever you go.
No, it is always at the embassy. Thank you very much.
Honorable Bryant, good morning.
Good morning, Chairperson. Lovely to see you.
Okay. Honorable Singh, good morning.
Morning, Chairperson and colleagues. Good to be back. Thanks.
And Honorable Mbatha, good morning.
Morning, Chair and everyone.
The others, Honorable Mbatha, good morning. Okay, let me quickly deal with the apologies. Honorable Paulson is traveling to Cape Town. We'll join the meeting as soon as possible. Honorable Tapa is attending the
recording PC in progress.
Culture is always know his meetings do clutch. And we have the apology for the DG. She's not coming in today, but the beauty with this DG of ours, she attends all of our meeting. Minister, you must convey our gratitude to her. Though we can't praise the fish for swimming, but she does level best to be in all our meetings. Then, yeah, those are the Korean much now better post your hospitalization. Welcome back. Then, even said that, Chileka, can you then fly the agenda so that
Chairperson, Chair, Singh, yeah. Chairperson?
Yes, Honorable Singh.
Yeah, I will be traveling from 10:30 onwards. So I'll be listening in my car as I move on. So I hope network carries me through. I'm in my office now, traveling to Cape Town. Thank you.
Okay. Noted. Thank you. Thank you so much for letting us know. Then the agenda is on the screen. Can I get the mover and the seconder of the agenda so that we can proceed? Honorable Singh, is that the end to move?
Yes, I move for the adoption of the agenda. Thank you.
Can I second?
I second, Honorable Chair.
I can't see which microphone it's on. Is it I Honorable?
Yes, Chair. I second.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Okay. Thank you. Then you can remove it. Like, we are fine. Yes. Minister, come you together with the Deputy Minister, including the team from the department, and also to by the department on the need for our country through us as parliament to approve the country's accession to the amended Nairobi Convention for the Protection, Management, and Development of Marine and Coastal Environment of the Western Indian Ocean. From the background, when one reads this, the original Nairobi Convention was narrowly focusing on the protection, management, and development of the marine and coastal environment of the Eastern Africa region. Can colleagues obviously see with
Chair, we keep losing your signal. I don't know if you could maybe move slightly. It keeps breaking up.
Shall I switch off the video and see? How about that, Honorable Ranch?
That seems better. Yes, thank you, Chair.
Okay, sorry about that. I was still saying that you've seen we are not in the Eastern Africa region. We are here in South Africa. For us, this convention is a legal regional agreement, which we all know it was adopted in 1985 with its two related protocols. And then it came into force in 1990. The Nairobi is much older. Especially the CBD and the UNFCCC. The narrow focus of this Nairobi Convention, the convention rightly so in April 2010, and hence today we are seized with it and its commended Nairobi Convention. Accordingly, this Nairobi Convention was to take into account, which the minister and the team will share with us, deal with the emerging issues and trends, like those that implicate the management and marine. The department is led by the minister on the management and implications thereof for our country. Thereafter, his colleagues ask questions to the matters. With these few words, Minister, I hand over to you and the team.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to Deputy Minister, to all members of the committee, to all the officials present. And Chair, thank you very much for that introduction. Perhaps because even after you switched off your video, we were struggling a little bit with sound. Let me repeat part of what you said, which is that this convention originally came into effect in the 1990s, and South Africa originally acceded to this convention in 2003. Subsequently, the convention was amended, and South Africa did not accede at the time when the convention was amended. We would like to rectify that situation now, and that is why we are bringing the matter before the committee, in the hope that you will support us acceding to this particular convention. Colleagues, as you have heard, our DG is not with us today, but we have two very able chief directors, Mr. Shea and Mr. Figizolo, who are both from the Oceans and Coasts branch. And they will be making the presentation today. and they will also be supporting each other in answering whatever questions the committee would have. Chair, through yourself, I would just like to note that we did make a minor addition to the presentation that we sent through to the committee, because we realized we had not included financial implications. So I'm sure honorable members would want to see that. Please, can you, it will be good if we can flat the presentation, and it will be very important, colleagues, if I can now hand over to Mr. Shea and Mr. Figizolo so that they can take us through. Thank you very much.
Good morning, Honorable Minister, Honorable Deputy Minister, Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee and members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Andre Shea from the department, as Minister had already highlighted. Just quickly, in terms of context, before I hand over to my colleague, Lisa Lomzi, the Nairobi Convention is part of the Regional Seas Program of UN Environment, the old United Nations Environment Program. There are only two such regional seas programs in sub-Saharan Africa, of which the Nairobi Convention is one. And this convention, as the chair of the Portfolio Committee had already highlighted, it deals with protection, management, and development of the marine and coastal environments of the Western Indian Ocean. And originally, this convention had two protocols, one dealing with wild fauna and flora protection, and the other one dealing with combating marine pollution in cases of emergency. It's around oil spills within the Western Indian Ocean. And of course, as the years went by, there were new emerging issues, land-based sources of pollution, the Convention on Biological Diversity, the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the Convention on Combating Desertifications, as well as issues around sustainable development. And of course, that warranted amendments to the Nairobi Convention, as well as looking at the geographical scope of the convention to also include South Africa as part of the scope of the Nairobi Convention. So when South Africa originally acceded to the convention, it only had the original two protocols, and over the years, through the emerging issues, these issues then became necessary for the amendment of the convention. We are at this point where the convention was in fact amended, and now South Africa has to accede to the convention. So I'm going to, with your permission, Honorable Chair, hand over to my colleague, Lisa Lomzi, to take you through the presentation. Over to you, Lisa Lomzi.
Good morning, Honorable Minister. And good morning, Honorable Deputy Minister and Honorable Chair of the Portfolio Committee, and Honorable Members and my colleagues. And thank you, Andre. And as Andre has indicated, I'll be taking you through the presentation. My name is Lisolomzi Fikizolo, and with your permission, I will also, if you agree, that I switch off the video.
Yes, I do agree.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Yes, as my colleague has indicated, and as the Minister and yourself, Honorable Chair, have indicated, that this is about acceding to the Nairobi Convention amended a convention, that is the text that has been amended. And I would also like to start off by saying that the Nairobi Convention is referred to as the Nairobi Convention for the Protection, Management and Development of the Marine and Coastal Environment of the Western Indian Ocean, which is the long name of the organization, but I would be referring to it as the Nairobi Convention for short. And as Andre has indicated, it's got its origins. It has its origins from the United Nations Conference on the Human Environment of 1972, which is a Stockholm, it's often referred to as Stockholm Agreement, and then the Regional Seas Program emanating from that Stockholm Agreement then came to being in 1974. And around the world, there are about 18 regional seas programs, and in the continent, we have two. One being the Nairobi Convention, which is the subject of discussion today. And there is another one which South Africa is also party to, which is in the Eastern Atlantic Seaboard or the West Coast of Africa, the Abidjan Convention. And next slide, please. Excuse me. As it has been indicated, the background of the convention is the fact that in 1985 it was developed, and at the time as South Africa we were not party to it, and we only acceded to it in 2003 after it came into force in 1996. And it is in the Western Indian Ocean, that is the area of coverage, which I would say is a very rich area in terms of organizations that are in there, which fortunately South Africa is party to many of them. And it's made up of 10 countries from Somalia in the mainland of the continent. And that also includes Kenya and then Tanzania, Mozambique and South Africa. And then there are also island states, Madagascar, Mauritius, Comores, and Seychelles. And then there is also our development partners that from time to time are involved in our meetings and in the development of the region as well, which is France and sometimes Germany. And I made mention of the area being rich with organizations. One of those which we work very closely is the Nairobi Convention. Our regional fisheries management organization, which I'll touch on later, SWIOFC in particular, which is Southwestern Indian Fisheries Commission, and then there's also the Indian Tuna Commission, the Indian Ocean Tuna Commission, the IOTC, which are both regional fisheries management organizations, but in the same area as the Nairobi Convention. And lastly, it will be the IORA, which is Indian Ocean Rim Association, which is mainly focusing in its six thematic areas on economic development of all the members that are in the Indian Ocean area space. Of course, it also extends up to Australia and the Indonesia. So next slide, please. And the purpose of tabling has been touched on by the minister and the honorable chair in the sense that when it was developed, it had a narrow focus, that is the organization. And as the time goes on, what happened, there were new or emerging issues, issues of marine spatial planning, for example, issues of marine protected areas, for example, and a host of other interesting and highly important activities in the ocean space. And therefore there was a need to amend the convention, and the convention was then amended in accordance with Article 19 of the convention itself, which then calls for parties to raise issues of concern or to raise issues where they feel that there needs to be amendments, and then through the also what is given in the convention as the guidelines, then a meeting of plenipotentiaries was called, and then through meeting of plenipotentiaries, then a decision was taken that it be amended. So its amendment was guided by procedures of the organization. And over and above that, which is also critically important for us, was that when it all started, it was focusing in East Africa, not taking into consideration of Southern Africa, which is where South Africa is. And then that amendment was to ensure that South Africa is also taken care of. And we really appreciate how they are taking care of South African interests and how they are managing those forces. That is a collective in the Nairobi Convention. Next slide, please. Yes, then for South Africa now, after that decision was taken, we were late off the starting blocks in terms of acceding, in terms of ratifying the new convention. And now after it was closed, then in accordance with Article 31, we had to accede, which amounts to the same thing, but given the different time, the times that we just, it was open for signature when we had to ratify, and then when it closed for signature, then we had to accede, which is what we are kindly requesting to be supported on. Next slide, please. Yes, as the minister is, honorable minister has indicated, in the earlier version of the presentation, this slide was not included. And then their feeling was that it must be included so that it can be also explained in here that our participation, there is an amount of money that South Africa has to pay, which is the contribution, annual contributions. And our annual contributions, it's $37,500 at the moment. And that has been determined utilizing the scales of the United Nations, which take into consideration a number of variables like the GDP of countries, the longevity life expectancy and a whole lot of others. And then it's a complicated kind of formula, which then will categorize countries as developing, underdeveloped, least developed countries. And then contributions will be determined according to that, including size, of course. So that is what we are contributing as South Africa, which is very important when we are then to consider what we are getting back from our participation in the Nairobi Convention, which we would like to maintain or even improve on. So with that 37,500, there is a lot that we are getting, which I will get into in the following slides. And we don't owe any pledges at the moment. We were late in the payments of 2020, but in 2021, that was paid. And now we are, I'll say, up to date, and we will be paying for 2022 instead. Next slide, please. Yes, the benefits comes for South Africa in the implementation of the convention, as I've alluded to earlier. And I would also like to explain to the honorable members that within the Nairobi Convention, then one would find projects from which there are programs from which there will be projects that the countries benefit from. One of such projects is the Western Indian Ocean Strategic Action Program, and that WIOSAP, it then has a number of components from which then South Africa gets its projects, which are outlined here, which I will explain. And for instance, with WIOSAP, there is protecting, restoring and managing of critical coastal habitats. And that includes, of course, coral reefs, mangroves, and the seagrasses. You know, coral reefs and coral reefs in particular in South Africa for tourism, particularly in the Sodwana area. And then you find mangroves, which extend from the former Transkei up to KwaZulu-Natal, very, very, very important in the ecosystem. And then seagrasses, particularly in the Mossel Bay and Knysna area, and the seahorse is well known, and it uses that as the habitat where it grows and breeds and so on. And then there is community engagement. There is water quality, ensuring water quality, that is part of the YSAP. And we know, we all know about the South African water quality program, particularly marine, in the marine environment. And the project that is there, which is in Gqeberha, formerly known as Port Elizabeth, that is in the for the improvement of water quality, that 1.8 million that is stated there for a period of 2 years is linked to that component of YSAP, which is ensuring water quality. And then the other project is the strategic action program for policy harmonization and institutional reforms, which is commonly known, or for short it's known as the Sapphire Project. And the Sapphire Project has about five components, which are inclusive of policy harmonization and management reforms, and the best practices and lessons, and the private sector commitment, so that private sector in their operations, they kind of elevate ecosystems management. We know, for example, we are talking in South Africa, blue economy, we are talking shipping, shipbuilding and development, we are talking a trade that is done through ships, but in their operation, then they do have an impact in the environment. What is it that they do? Yes, we may know that it is a known fact that through IMO, there is the Marine Environmental Protection Committee, which looks and regulates that is the operation of ships. But for the continent and for the regional seas project, then we are bringing those close together. Whilst there may be those conventions, whilst there may be those strides made by the other organization, as I've mentioned, that is IMO, but as the continent, we are able to look at it very closely and then bring those two projects together and for the effectiveness of implementation. And through that, we are getting a funding of 5.7 million for a period of 2 years. And that will also include capacity building, where we are looking at training for sustainable capacity for improved ocean governance, because I'll say ocean governance is right at the center of our activities at the moment, and it's a global undertaking. That is, whether we are talking marine spatial planning, whether we are talking marine protected areas, but it all amounts to ocean governance. I've mentioned Gqeberha, but the other benefiting area is the Buffalo or River estuary, which is in a town city called East London, also in the Eastern Cape. There are others that the department is currently busy with. With Umhlatuze, for example, and then others are still very at a very early stage, but they will be going through the processes of the Nairobi Convention. Next slide, please. So, key obligations of the convention that we would put emphasis on amongst many is to develop measures to prevent, reduce, combat, and control pollution of the convention area, and in particular talking land-based and offshore sources. Land-based, you will be thinking about plastics, for example, that end up in the marine environment through our river systems. And we know the recent endorsement by UNEA 5 on the management of plastics, which was looked at as a historic resolution, and of course that is on the radar screens as well of the Nairobi Convention, because the organization itself is also looking at dealing with those as its founding principles, if I may call it that. And there is also to ensure sound environmental management of natural resources, and to prevent, reduce, combat, and control coastal erosion, and to protect and preserve fragile ecosystems and endangered species through the establishment of marine protected areas, and to cooperate in the field of scientific research, monitoring and assessment of pollution. And we have seen some I would say, spin-offs to that thus far. With our national pollution program that is for water quality monitoring, as I've mentioned earlier, where there were, if I can make an example, there are establishment, hotel establishment in the Trenerys and Seagulls area, and we found that in the water there was high levels of nitrates. And when we kind of tried to find the source of those nitrates, then it was established that it's leaking septic tanks from those establishments that find their way into the ocean space. So being involved in regional programs like this and this kind of funding that comes through assisting us as well in our national programs, then it makes it easier to put together programs in place at national level that talks to the regional agenda. And furthermore, it is to establish systems for environmental impact assessment and to cooperate in the formulation and adoption of rules and procedures for the determination of liability and compensation for damage resulting from pollution. And if I can also say something about that one, honorable members, South Africa, as I've mentioned, is a member of the International Maritime Organization. And as a member of the International Maritime Organization, then there are conventions that are domesticated in South Africa. And the domestication then comes with the responsibility of implementing and of monitoring and of acting when there is a problem. And with oil pollution, then we will be talking civil liability convention of the IMO in terms of addressing the issue of liability from the polluter itself. But in terms of us dealing with the cleanup, in terms of us as South Africa combating, then we share those experiences with our counterparts in the continent. And from organizations like the Nairobi Convention, then it becomes a bit easier to pull everyone together, particularly the group of 10 countries, as I've mentioned earlier on in my presentation. Next slide, please. Our participation and our plea at the moment to be supported in and for the portfolio committee to agree that South Africa accedes to the Nairobi Convention revised text is mainly driven from the South African point of view from various angles. One is the National Development Plan, which requires South Africa to be engaged in regional cooperation, whereby synergies will be found and to address pressure on natural resources. And the NDP further encourages Africa's development and cooperation to address effects of climate change and building environmental sustainability and resilience. So that is what we are seeking to do, to be part of that collective, which the NDP is giving guidance to as to what needs to be done. So this is one of such avenues that we are exploring as the country. This accessioning to the Nairobi Convention amended text, because it talks to those emerging issues which were identified by the National Development Plan, which we are taking full responsibility as a department that we need to deliver on them, and by so acceding, then we'll be 1 foot up, say on the door, and. The second is the amended convention enables South Africa to play a leadership role in articulating interests of developing countries and continue to provide global leadership on sustainable development, particularly within the context of South Africa's custodianship role in the implementation of the outcomes of the Johannesburg Plan of Implementation, which, honorable members, you will all remember, 2002, when we had the World Summit on Sustainable Development, which is also a United Nations program, and the document that was the recommendations that came from that discussion is that Johannesburg plan. It's what is referred to as the Johannesburg plan of action. And one of those is, for example, a system of representative marine protected areas, which from the Nairobi Convention, there is an outlook that has been concluded with a beautifully written South African chapter when it comes to marine protected areas. And we want to maintain or even to improve on that in terms of our leadership, which extends even beyond the borders of the continent, as we are taking such experiences to organizations like the Commission for the Conservation of Antarctic Marine Living Resources, which we are a part to as South Africa. In addition, it's that South Africa would utilize this regional environmental arena to mobilize financial and technical resources for implementation of national SADC and NEPAD programs and strengthening of sub-regional and regional institutions such as African Ministerial Conference on Environment. And that is critically important, more especially with the kind of pressure we are feeling as a country in as far as financial resources, if I can put it that way. And then participating in the Nairobi Convention, as you've seen in my previous slides, the projects that we have so far, which collectively are about 10 million rand that we've been able to get to implement our national programs, of course, which talk to the regional agenda, as I've indicated. But it's also cross-referencing with other continental bodies. And NEPAD is mentioned there. There is PEF under NEPAD, which is Pan-African Fisheries. And with Pan-African Fisheries, then there will be those organizations that I've mentioned earlier, which is SWIOF and the IOTC. And a host of others in the continent, of course being developed under UNFSA, which is United Nations Fish Stock Agreement, and then the SADC, there will be the SADC Protocol on Fisheries, which we by our participating in the Nairobi Convention also enables us to kind of cross reference and make it a point that we strengthen those institutions. So. That is why that is a strategic part of the strategic focus that is that we've looked at and guided us into ensuring that we do come and present to you, honourable members, this request of supporting the department in acceding to the revised or the amended convention. And the Nairobi Convention and its protocol calls play a coordinating role in the implementation of a series of intervention projects developed under the new Partnership for Africa's Development and Environment Initiative. I've already touched on that one. Next slide, please. So it is recommended that the Portfolio Committee supports this accessioning of South Africa to the amended Nairobi Convention, as it will open up a number of doors, as I've indicated during my presentation, which I am willing to touch on or to even explain further if questions are asked. And one that I can think of at this moment, which is very important, is the role that Nairobi Convention plays, which I think with the support that we can get, it will take us far. There are topical issues, for instance, which the Nairobi Convention has taken on board, like, for instance, the Sustainable Development Goal 14, which is about conserve and sustainably use the oceans, seas and marine resources for sustainable development. And that is talking to the reduction of marine pollution and protection and restoration of ecosystems, for example. And other than that, on top of that, it is about capacity building through training and through resources that can be brought through this, through acceding to the amended Nairobi Convention text. And I would thank you. I'll stop there and thank you, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members.
Presentation. Colleagues,
sorry, I see the end of
Honorable Singh. It's going to be followed by Honorable Bryant, then Honorable Weber,
thank you, Honorable. Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. We lost you there. I think you're having some problem with your networks. Now, thank you for the presentation, and I think it's quite a convincing presentation with all the benefits of being signatories to this convention. I just noticed one slide there that there are a number of countries that are not paying their dues, you know, some running into $1 million or so. And I just want to know, what impact does that have on the overall implementation of the convention when countries do not pay their dues? And also, having noted that South Africa took some time to pay its dues in last year, I think, or the year after. And were there any reasons for that? Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'm just going to go, if that's okay. Chairperson, my first question was covered by Honorable Singh now in terms of the late payment for 2020 as to why that payment was late, what the reasons were. Then just in terms of the various programs, the Source to Sea and all of those, how many of those projects are currently underway and how many of them are planned to go forward? It was a little bit vague there in terms of which ones have started or which ones are going to start and you know the exact timeframes for them. I'd be quite interested to hear a little bit more about that SwartCorps project and whether or not that is going to focus on the wastes being generated by the Motherwell Canal. Because a large part of that challenge appears to be sort of behavioral patterns and education in terms of dumping and waste going into that canal. So just want to find out what that 1.85 million is going to be spent on, what that program is going to comprise of, because it's important for us to know that. And then I think very importantly, how are we measured in terms of our obligations as per the convention? So what is our quote unquote score? What's that been so far in terms of our performance? You mentioned that we were a bit of a slow starter. If we aren't fulfilling our obligations or if we haven't fulfilled the obligations in the past, what is the assurance that you know that is going to happen going forward, particularly taking into account that it's going to cost around about R500,000 to remain a signatory? And who monitors that Joburg implementation plan or what's JOP? Who monitors that for compliance and follows up in terms of that implementation plan? Is that DEF? Who's in charge of that? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Bryant. Over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you for the presentation. I enjoyed it. And I have to agree with my colleague, Honorable Bryant. Whenever they speak about projects, I mean, you rename some interest projects. But can we, with every one of them on slide 6 and slide 8 and slide 9, have a breakdown of exactly how many projects there are, but by name? Saying we do the seahorses. This is the amount of money we've already spent on it. From which year did you start? Is it completed? It's still ongoing. So that we can have a proper breakdown of these projects that you're talking about. I think that is really important so that we can actually see how much money goes where and what is the exact projects that you are busy with. And so then, Honorable Chair, Mr. Fikizolo, your action program, I know that I've already seen. I have a problem on slide 8. How successful are we regarding the key obligations? So the key obligations is very important and they're kind of very impressive. But my question to this is twofold. One of our biggest problems on the coastal lines is criminal activities. And I don't see a separate or actual focus on that. And what are we doing with the criminal activities and how are we countering it? How are we combating it? Is there resources available for it? What is the plan of action for that? I understand that is not the focus of this, but very few of these things can be done if the criminals actually goes on doing what they're doing, destroying our environment and stealing, basically. The other part of this is how much money do we need and how many resources do we have to actually adhere to these key obligations? Then, part 9, it includes with your strategic focus. I would like that fighting the corruption, the criminality activities that we get there. And then just one very interesting question that I want to ask, since when I went through all your, when I did some research, that 88% of your mangroves are getting lost. And we have basically 4 sites in South Africa where we have mangroves. So my question is, do we also have an 88% loss of these mangroves? And if we do, what are we doing to increase and make sure that this doesn't happen? And basically, have we lost mangroves? And what is the plan to increase it and make sure that we have that? Thank you very much, Jay.
Thank you, Honorable Phillips, over to you.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for the presentation. Some of my questions have already been covered by my colleagues. I would just like to know the money that is set aside for South Africa for our projects. Where is that money accounted for? Does that accounting happen to the portfolio committee? Or does that accounting happen to the body of the Nairobi Convention? And then on the mangroves, I'm very, very concerned about the mangroves, especially the ones in St. Lucia. They are dying off at an astronomical rate and they are being taken over by just normal reeds. And then the other thing regarding our late membership fees, can we actually financially afford those membership fees? Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Phillips. Can colleagues still hear me? I want to check that. I've just have a terrible network challenge today. Can you hear me?
It's better now, Che.
Clearly, Che.
Yes, we can.
You can hear me clearly. Okay, that was the last end, but I think I want to comment, Minister. I think it's then that we benefit from this convention. And the view that there's no reason why we can't support the accession to this convention. Then Dr. Fikizolo, you talked about the SAFEA project, which involves policy harmonization and institutional reforms. Can you then clarify which policy and institutional reforms we have undertaken in response to our participation in the original Nairobi Convention? And then the other is to know as to how regularly that conference is today. And then how ourselves as a country regularly report presentation. And this issue that one wants to get clarity on is as to how related or different is this amended Nairobi Convention to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea. The United Convention on the Law of the Sea, UNCLOS, considering that this amended Nairobi Convention, it focuses from ships, pollution caused by dumping, pollution from land-based sources, pollution bed activities, airborne pollution, biodiversity protection, pollution in cases of and environmental damage from the engineering activities, amongst other things. Hence, you see, I'm very excited that if indeed all these issues are going to be attended to, then that also says the question that Honorable Singh to say, when a party does not live to up to the obligation of this convention, then what happens? Because if indeed all these issues are followed and the other nations are complying with this convention, then we won't have all those various types that this convention seeks to address. Over to you, Minister and team.
Thank you very much, Chair. Let me hand over to the team to respond.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and thank you, Honorable Minister, and Honorable Members for the questions. I will respond. I will take the first mic. Excuse me. I'll take the first mic to respond to the questions, and my colleague will come in later as Mr. Chair. With regards to the questions asked by Honorable Singh, countries not paying their dues and the impact of that to the operations of the organization. Yes. When it comes into the, say, system of procedure for the organization, there is a meeting that takes place every 2 years called the Conference of Parties. But in between, because the organization has a secretariat that liaises with all the focal points of the member states or the parties in the Nairobi Convention. That matter of non-payment has been raised from time to time, but the approach, given the inequalities that are there, and maybe to a large extent, the understanding between countries, if I can call it that, there are no sanctions at this stage, if that would be the question. There are no sanctions at this stage except to encourage countries to pay. We have seen it happening in the few years that have been that we as South Africa have been part to the Nairobi Convention, that there are countries that won't pay for whatever reasons for 3 to 4 successive years. And after that, they make that payment. And that is not only unique to the Nairobi Convention. We've seen that in the Benguela Current Convention, and it is also happening in the Abidjan Convention. And the causes, given also that different categorization of countries, least developed, the seats, small island and island states, developing and so on, then the ability to honor its to pay the contributions, then you find that from time to time they don't meet, they don't pay in the time that they are supposed to. In terms of projects that are managed by the organization itself, mostly it's not from the contributions. It is from funds that would be given to the organization by the Global Environmental Facility, for example, or the United Nations Environmental Program, or the United Nations Development Program. For example, the Sapphire Project is funded entirely by the UNDP. And then the funds that we have is the funds that the contributions are mainly for running of the organization. There will be those gaps, and then those gaps will be filled by the donor funding. But countries are always encouraged to pay. And Dr. Wairunge, that is Dixon, who is the executive secretary, is doing a great job thus far, because it is a path that one has to tread carefully, given the sensitivities that may be along the path. But the organization in the continent is, I would say, it's the top performing with regards to its objectives, and then followed by others. And for South Africa, the late payment, I would say in our system, the hard lockdown and the following processes then had an impact on how the office is functioning. And then because of that, I think that was the main reason why, or that is the main contributor to us paying late our contributions. And it all caught us by surprise, and it was a new phenomenon that we have never experienced before. And then in our processes, then it really affected us. A system that was definitely uncharacteristic of South Africa in terms of its obligations, because that is what we do perfectly well as well in all the organizations that we are part to. And that also answers the question by, a similar question was also raised by Honorable Bryant. And he was also asking about the Source to See. Yes, Source to See is a project that is already underway. Two projects, excuse me, from the Nairobi Convention, from the WIOSAP side and from the SAFIRE side, mostly from the WIOSAP side, that is the Western Indian Ocean Strategic Action Project program. That is, Source to Sea is the one that is underway, and secondly, it's the one that is in the in Gqeberha, that is Swartkops River. How are we measured in terms of our performance? Okay. And then the question was about Swartkops, as to what is happening in Swartkops. Swartkops, we have a national pollution program where there is the department has been able, through Operation Pakisa, to establish links and develop a laboratory with the Walter Sisulu University, which is a historical Black institution, in an area where it was referred to as the Transkei Gap. And then the Transkei Gap, meaning that there were no facilities that were of significant scientific importance. Secondly, scientific data that would be generated to answer a range of questions that we are having. And that gap then had to be plugged, and this administration helped us to do just that. And then we have that one. And working with coastal provinces, there were areas that were identified, that is provincial coastal committees as per the Integrated Coastal Management Act. And secondly, the local governments that is in municipalities along the coastline, and then the provincial government was another layer that contributed in identifying those areas. And the Swartkops River was identified as one of the most heavily polluted rivers. But we had to get a scientific data as to what was the baseline. And then working with the laboratory, those water samples were taken, sediment samples were taken, and tissue samples from organisms like copepods and worms that are taken from the sand for fishing were also taken, just to have a look at what is going on with the river. Yes, apart from debris that will end in the river, like your tires and plastics and so on, There were also those contaminants that are dissolved in the water that the naked eye won't see, like heavy metals that were found in there. But if honorable members would want a report, maybe from that area, that we can provide. But for me now, I can safely say, given all that, then we found out that we need more money to involve communities. That is the education that Honorable Bryant mentioned, and then working with a conservancy a group that has been doing work for a while now in there, working with the municipality and working with the Nelson Mandela University. So and it's a combination of actors that are working in there to do education, not only education, but to make it a point that there is a river cleanup and to identify the sources of other pollution, like if it's the industries that are pumping waste into the river, what is it that they are pumping into the river? And when there are red flags that are raised by the laboratory, then the program or the project that we have in there is attending to those. And recently we had a meeting with all the stakeholders just to look at how far we've gone thus far. And there is a promise because there are certain gadgets that have been also produced to look at National point of view, it can be addressed through parties and initiative five of operation parties where they are both at the coast one of the products being the regional MCS center in the moment. Working with the Nairobi Convention as but from I missed, I must apologize. I missed you. There was a seagrass issue, how much we have, but there was something that I missed in the question. I'm not sure whether I can ask to repeat that question, because seagrasses, we do have scientists that are dealing with that, and any information, further information on the status of those in South Africa, we can provide a return response. And Honorable Phillips, the question was that the amount, where is it accounted for? And as I've explained, the organization through its secretariat and overseen by Dr. Osire, they are the ones that are doing on the project itself. They are the ones that and engage as soon as possible with the relevant party, so that if there is an intervention that they can make as an organization, that it is timeous, so that when we say 2 years, it is 2 years instead of three or four. So it is attended at that level. But as I indicated, the breakdowns can be provided, and the mangroves concerns. I take it as a concern, as a statement, not as a question. In St. Lucia, and that is a concern that I will take and raise with our colleagues that are dealing with biodiversity, more especially along that part of the Honorable Phillips. I've already addressed it under the and there were questions that were asked by the Honorable Chair. I had a difficulty with my reception this side. I am not sure, but if I didn't hear it correctly, you'll please correct me, and please apologize. I'm apologizing to you, Honorable Chair, for that. But you are asking which policies we're talking about, policy harmonization and management, but from the South African point of view, which ones have we harmonized, projects haven't taken shape yet. Those are the ones that are still under the pipeline. They are still, that are in the pipeline. There are discussions that are underway, and as soon as they take shape, that information will be communicated through. And how regularly do we report? And my assumption is that we report to the organization. There's one meeting every 2 years, but in between there are intersessional discussions that will be about COP decisions. So each COP decisions, if we have 14 COP decisions, take for instance a COP decision to have a protocol on mangroves or a blue carbon. So with that, there will be discussions where experts, not only the head of delegation, as it will be normally the case with COP, but the head of delegation, but with experts in the field from each country, they will be invited. Those are organized by the Secretariat of the Nairobi Convention, and they will be seeking to unpack that decision, and not only unpack, to identify areas where they can be areas where there needs there is a need for prioritization, and then the interventions thereof that must be implemented. So we deal with it like that, so that when it comes to the following a COP meeting. For instance, there was last year COP 10, and next year there will be COP 11. So in COP 11, then we will be able to report as the organization and as respect as responsible countries for each project or for each undertaking. And then the relation was asked between UNCLOS and what the organization stands for. UNCLOS is the premier law of the oceans, the United Nations Convention for the Law of the Seas, as the Honorable Chair has indicated. And it covers a wide range of things, of issues, including the delineation or the demarcation of the ocean so that you have your internal waters and the exclusive economic zone and so on. And it also talks about the responsibilities of countries in terms of managing their natural resources. Take, for instance, with fisheries, as we do with fisheries management. Fisheries management is leaning more heavily on the provisions of UNCLOS and safe passage of vessels and so on and so on. And it does touch on issues of pollution. But the implementing agents or agencies that will take that one a bit further will be the special agencies of the United Nations. And one of those is the International Maritime Organization. And as I have mentioned in my presentation there is the Marine Environment Protection Committee, which looks into those issues of pollution. And then countries, through their participation. In South Africa, we have the Department of Transport with its agency, South African Maritime Safety Authority, and then SAMHSA will be the one that is implementing those. And of course, working with us as the Department of Environmental Affairs in the abatement and pollution of that. So we take those and link them with our participation in the Nairobi Convention so that there is no gap in what other department, the assisted department is doing and what they stand for through the United Nations processes or channels or platforms. And then seeing that Nairobi Convention is also a product of the United Nations, as we've mentioned in our opening slides about the United Nations environmental Conference on the Human and Environment, a conference of 1972. And for them to come up in 1974. UNCLOS is 1982, but that is UNCLOS 3. So there's that relationship between the two. One is not overshadowing the other. One has a specific role that they play, but within the framework of the United Nations. And of course, as informed by certain provisions of UNCLOS, as our national laws does, for instance, the Marine Living Resources Act, when it comes to the management of resources. I think I've covered all the questions, but I would ask my colleague, Mr. Sher, to come in if there's anything that I've missed or that. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Are these follow-up hands or old hands, colleagues?
Mine is a follow-up, Chair.
Mine is also a follow-up, Chair.
So Honorable Brian followed. Honorable Brian, Honorable Weber, in that order.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you, Mr. Fikizolo, for those comprehensive responses. I think you've made a very good account of yourself and the work that your team has done. Although we would still very much appreciate those reports so that we can measure the progress of all of the various programs that are being implemented. It is heartening to hear from you that we are a leading light when it comes to the implementation of our obligations. But it would be important for us to see that in black and white with timelines expenditure and progress all set out so that we can actually properly measure how well these projects are being rolled out and implemented. And then just one important follow-up question, Mr. Figuezolo. The impact on the late or the impact on the payment, which led to the late payment, that you suggested was caused by the lockdown. I mean, that's very concerning. Were there other payments that were also impacted by the lockdown? Because if that is the reason, then surely that would be something that would have been felt symptomatically in other payments as well. So if you can just expand on how the lockdown prevented us from making that payment and whether or not, you know, this is endemic in other areas, because that's very concerning and we should certainly investigate that. Thank you.
Honorable Weber.
Thank you, Chair. Apologize if I was unclear, Mr. Figuezolo, but my colleague did cover me. We would like not a breakdown of every project, but every project that's been done to name it by name and then the expenditure to it and the timeline to it. So thank you for that. Sorry if he was in misunderstanding. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Over to you, Mr. Figuezolo.
Chairperson.
Honorable Minister.
Can I suggest that with regard to the question Honorable Bryant is raising in relation to the late payment, can we answer that question in writing? Because Mr. Figuezolo may not be able to answer it from a line function point of view, because I imagine it would relate to finance. So can we take that one in writing? But otherwise, let me hand over to Mr. Figuezolo.
Thank you, Honorable Minister, and thank you, Honorable Bryant, for the wonderful words you shared with us, and I will definitely take those to the team that I work with, that I'm part of, because the work that we do is teamwork. It's not me, and I will share those with them as soon as after this meeting, and I will also take what the Honourable Minister has said as well, that we will provide written responses on the impact non-payment as to what led to it. All that we will respond to it in writing, and I am also of the view that okay, and with Honourable Weber's question. On expenditure, on the breakdown of the projects that we are doing and the timelines, which is also what has been raised by Honorable Bryant, that is taken, that the breakdowns or the documents will be provided that to give those details. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Shortest meeting we have ever held. I want to thank Harry Blue. Back, can you mute your microphone, please? We agree the other questions, the one as the minister posed, you are going to submit it in writing. And then I should think this is the shortest meeting that we have ever held. I want to thank the minister, deputy minister, and the team, including the colleagues. And then it brings us to the end of the meeting. just to remind you, I'm told it's a three-line whip. Make sure that your parties don't fight for certain the meeting. Honorable Brian, is it anyone?
Yes.
Honorable Brian?
Yes, yes, sorry, yes. Sorry, Chairperson. Just very, very quickly. I know that the title of the item was the recommend that that we support this. I just want to confirm that that is the recommendation from the portfolio committee, because it would be our we would be in agreement as the DA caucus with that. Just to confirm. Thanks, Chair.
My apologies. I proposed it earlier and forgot to. That's why we were a team. So I propose that we support this and then we submit this convention for adoption by the National Assembly. I'm putting as a motion. A mover, you've moved already, Honorable Bryant. Can I get a seconder?
I'll second the chair. It's Honorable Weber.
Honorable, if support the motion, then it will be submitted to the National Assembly for adoption. Thank you so much. Good. Then that brings us to the end of the meeting. Thank you, Minister and team. Thank you, colleagues. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
The meeting gets
up. Thank
you, colleagues.
Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Thank you, members. Bye-bye.
Thank you, Chair.